following program may contain coarse language, suggestive dialogue, and discussion of violent imagery and sexual situations. It is intended for mature listeners who can tell the difference between facts and opinions.
Zombies, ninjas, and demons, oh my. Hello, and welcome to the Toonami Faithful Podcast. I am your rare host, Kuro, and with me I have a very rare...
Imperial writer, sort of, V-Lord GTZ.
And a not-so-rare...
Laser Kid, also an editorial writer, at least allegedly.
And if you have been listening or have been on Twitter, you know that Sketch has taken a brief break, so I am taking over. Please be nice, guys. I'm doing my very best. And tonight, as I said, we'll be talking about the best things that you can ask for in the anime world, which is zombies, ninjas, and demons.
Oh, my.
All packed into one episode, yeah. So we had a premiere episode of Zom 100. We had a new episode of Ninja Kamui, and we're going to be covering the last three episodes of the entertainment arc, and that's why we have the very rare V-Lord. We figured the expert should come in and talk about a very awesome finisher to a very awesome arc.
Always happy to talk about Demon Slayer.
We never talk about Demon Slayer, V-Lord. You and me, that never happens.
Never, ever.
No, not at all.
We don't have the most successful Demon Slayer podcast.
No, not at all.
Yes. Well, we'll have to hold off a little bit because we had a premiere, and let's talk about that first. I might be the only person here who had seen Zom for the first time ever. Is that true?
I've seen the entire thing as it was simuldubbed. So,
that's what I thought. Yes. I feel like most of the people on staff have seen Zom 100 already. And I know you guys talked about it when they announced it was coming on, but this was completely new to me. And honestly, this is not something I would have sought out. But
honestly, you win because the production of Zom 100 was an absolute catastrophe. There'd be episodes, and then there'd be long breaks, and then a couple more episodes, and then a long break. Like, it was just, the production was a nightmare.
Well, The first episode was definitely odd.
That's one way to put it.
It's odd. Honestly, so you have the character Akira Tendo. It starts off right away. He's got a great new job. He comes in all optimistic, ready to get started, ready to do the best he can, even as a crush. And then his soul is crushed when he discovers that it is a black company, an exploitative work organization. And oh my God, who has not felt a little bit of empathy for that character in that moment? Holy crap.
Oh,
that
gosh.
Would have been the moment I would have been like, nope, I'm out of here. Sorry. Because
my brain literally went to, oh, so that's how Kuroshi happens.
Yeah. And if you've ever been in that situation, listeners, remember you have rights. This is America. You don't have to be stuck in that situation. Anyway, so after, 3 years of this garbage, being treated like crap, doing overtime. I think even the first 3 days, he doesn't even sleep at home, you know, or have a real meal. He finally gets to go home and then gradually sinks into this depression and acts unironically like a zombie himself until one day he's heading into work and gets attacked. And hilariously, the first thought he has is, oh no, I'm going to be late for work because of the zombie. As he's being chased by his fellow employees. Like, okay, buddy, it's time to crack out of this. You're free now. And it does take him a minute, but then he realizes, oh shit, I am free. So he thinks, the first thing I'm going to do after rejoicingly saying he might binge drink and watch movies, which yes, this is definitely a Kuro response. I appreciate that, is he's going to tell his crush, Saori, that he has a crush on her. Unfortunately, she has been repeatedly taken advantage of by his boss, which is super gross and creepy. Also illegal, listeners. Also very, very, very illegal.
Indeed.
Anyway, he goes in to confess his feelings, runs into his boss, who's a zombie, who, after being attacked by a super Super Akira Tendo because he's got that rugby experience, even though he's not at all built at all in any way, shape, or form like a rugby player. He somehow over 3.5 years has managed to retain those massive muscle skills, I guess.
He's got Hanamaru sumo skills. Let's go. Yes.
Suspend your disbelief, ladies and gentlemen, because he takes him on and, like, you know, pushes him out the window, I guess. And it's pretty satisfying to everybody who watched that. Unfortunately, his lady love is, in fact, also a zombie. So he confesses his love to her and then lets her go. And then realizes that, oh my gosh, I really am free. And he kind of returns to his happy-go-lucky state. So he decides he's going to try to do all the things that he's always wanted to do. And yeah, I actually kind of admire that. I mean, I'm not overly fond of zombie anything, but because it's a little bit of a overused trope, in my opinion. However, this is a very amusing response to that by having I thought it was... It feels a little bit tongue-in-cheek.
A little bit. I'm not a big zombie guy either, although a friend of mine did drag me through Walking Dead, which I actually appreciate that he did that right now, because Zom 100 is like Walking Dead if it had more joy in its life.
There's no joy in The Walking Dead.
You think you have joy for about 5 seconds, and then it tramples it. But I do appreciate that The guys behind Zom 100 clearly know zombie tropes, because the zombies behave very much like I'd expect them to, but they also have fun with the characters, and I love it.
B-Lord, what are your thoughts, having seen it and just on the first episode alone?
Yeah, I mean, Zom 100, I think, is, like, really good at kind of, like, bringing fun into a situation that is normally viewed as, like, a crisis. And I think it's really kind of a testament to the strength of, like, the creators. Like, Hato Asso especially, he also did Alice in Borderland, which has a very successful Netflix live-action adaptation. So he has a lot of experience doing these types of survival stories, and this is kind of a twist on what you'd expect from a survival story. Instead of, like, there being this constant fear around the zombies, the focus is more around, okay, what fun can we have in spite of this dire situation? It's just a good time. It's like you're on a fun adventure that just happens to have zombies in it.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's not like goofy zombies either. Like, the zombie situation is serious, is real, is dire, and it's portrayed that way. But our character would rather just be happy about the fact he doesn't have to go to work.
Yeah, no shit.
I mean, that's a mood. That's a real mood.
I honestly was still stuck on the mood of the depressing work life, like, in a real way. And so when he was like, I'm going to day drink and binge watch movies, I'm like, all right, you do you, Akira.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you. I also love the voice actor, Zeno Robinson, and I love the
absolutely
diversity element. He's a black actor, but he's playing a not black character. So I love that, because it reinforces something that we've talked a lot about, which is a talented voice actor can be anything and play any character.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Though it is important to promote more diversity, this specifically is such he's doing a great job. You know, I've watched one episode and I'm like, all right, yeah, he sounds like who he's supposed to be. So this is definitely not a series I would have sought out, I'm not going to lie. But it seems kind of perfect for Toonami.
Yeah, I think, like, for me, I mainly sought it out because, like, Viz sent me the manga when they started releasing it.
Oh, nice.
So it was like, okay, I'm familiar with Hato Asso a little bit.
And because, I saw it because it looked different.
Yeah. That's one thing I'll say. Like, I'd say visually, especially the first episode, has such a great kind of visual composition, especially with how, like, it depicts, like, the blood splatter of, like, all the zombies with, like, kind of the more spray paint type look.
Yeah, it's colorful as opposed to just being red, and it's over this monochrome, because the whole the majority of the episode is monochrome reflecting Akira's viewpoint. And then you have the zombies, weirdly enough, bring some color into his life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that...
No, that makes perfect sense, because it's very drab and black and white. And when he suddenly does have his realization, color does come into the world. So I think you're absolutely onto something there.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to see a lot more visual representations of that sort of thing, like having a simile or an analogy be represented visually in the anime form like that. It is a really elegant item, but in this case, it was perfect. It gave us what we needed, and it's off to a good start, I think. You know, and it feels like a really good fit for Toonami, I think. And obviously anything that has action is going to do well. But in this case, it's a twist on a traditional trope. And like you've said, like it's a little more upbeat, it's a little funnier, and it has likable characters. I also want to point out that it has an adult character, not a teenager. So that's refreshing. Can we get away from the teenage zombie slayer? Yes, we can. He's a working man. So I don't know yet, because I haven't seen it, if the other characters will also be adults, but hopefully we'll get at least an equal representation.
I would say so, yes.
Well, with that, I think we can move on to the newest episode of Ninja Kamui, which we've all been watching
with
bated breath. Man, I'm still not over Asuka being a ninja. Like, that's still, I still have a little bit of whiplash.
Me too, honestly. Now, they've given enough context where it works, but it's still, wait, what?
Yeah.
It's not a negative, but it is something that I'm like, oh, right.
Yeah. So Asuka continues her narrative in this episode, which she sort of started from the last episode, which is explaining to Higan, you know, her connection and why she's helping him, but not before he has to defeat Lil in his suit. And I, you know, you thought you had it all with the ninjas, but hey, we have little like versions of Gundam suits too. Love it. I kind of love that.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I can just see them saying, what else can we add this to make this more awesome? Hey, let's have them fight in suits in their ninja skills. Okay, yeah, let's do it. Let's make it work.
As Sketch and I keep making the joke, it's ninja robots.
Yes, yes.
The joke will never die. I'm sorry. It's too
funny. On top of that, his robot suit is like a special one that can adhere to his particular skills and follow his will because it synchronized with his brainstem. And so he very easily defeats Lil after gaining his suit. And then he saves him from exploding himself. And you're like, oh, what's he going to do with him? Well, you didn't have to wait long. His severed head ends up back at Alza headquarters. And it looks a lot worse for the wear. Like, hell of a lot worse. He definitely suffered heavily before he lost his head. Okay, Higan, you do you, buddy. And then Asuka goes on to explain the background between her and Mari, which is, it's already hard enough to be reminded each week by just watching the opening and the closing segment of these, of Higan's pain. But then you get a real sense of Mari and her more like human self. Like, she had relationships, she was excited about being pregnant, she was in love, and it really drives home how painful that loss is for the main character. I think
absolutely. No, I think that's it does do one thing I really like, in that Egon's not suffering alone anymore.
Yeah, I would agree. I kind of wonder, she describes that she always had the secret mission to find the replacement for the chieftain, but I'm not really clear, because she says she has her own reasons and her own mission for doing this, and it seems like there's something else she's trying to accomplish that wasn't really expressed, so I kind of wonder what her whole end game is here. And I can't imagine if she is trying to continue the Ninja Clan, who else would really be qualified now to lead it, given that so many of them have turned into this corrupt corporate entity, you know?
Yeah, I feel like if it were to go that route, the only person left would be Higan, but I feel like narratively that wouldn't really make sense.
Or her.
Yeah, or her.
Could go for her. Could go for her. That would be a very interesting setup for that to be the case.
No, Higan's, his end game is to join his wife and child. He's made that clear.
I believe he believes that, but I said this last time we talked about it, but I'm of the belief with this setup, we did learn that the ability that was used to save Higan was originally Mari's.
Mm-hmm.
What mother wouldn't try and save their son?
I don't know.
I feel like the son is going to show up alive, not as a bad guy. I don't think we're going that route. I think he's going to be alive, a surprise shock reveal alive at the end, and I think that's going to give Higan, because if Mari's wish is for him to live on, I feel like that's where this is going.
I think you've been listening to Paul too much.
No, actually, I have not been listening to Paul on this one. That's just my own take.
His pet theory.
I mean, my theory is based on the fact that Mari had that technique, and if we're going to tell us, why tell us that if that's not going to come into play?
Because she used it on him. That was the technique he had.
Yeah, that's it was used on him, why would tell us it originated from Mari? Mari didn't use it on him.
No, I mean, I think it made sense because that was never his secret technique. He's been using
right.
His secret technique.
Our secret ninja friend used it on Higan, and she learned it from Mari. Why tell us she learned it from Mari if Mari didn't? If there's not going to be some connection to Mari using it separately?
No, because he was there with their dead bodies in the first episode.
He was shown as dead for a while too.
I feel like he was there for quite a while with them. If they were going to come back, that would have been the moment.
Well, I guess we will see, but that is the feel I've got.
I don't know, V-Lord. What do you think? Tie break.
I don't know. I feel like the kid's dead.
Up until we got that reveal, I thought so too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we didn't see any wounds on the child, I guess, but I don't know. I feel like, honestly, it'd be kind of contrived to have the kid be alive. So I'm not sure how I would feel about that being a reveal.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess depending on the execution, I wouldn't be like opposed to it, I guess.
I just feel like the reveal of, oh, hey, by the way, Mari also had this ability. I don't know why the story would tell us that if it's not going to come into play. That's what I don't get.
I also like that we got a better sense of what was really hinted at, why there were all of these runaways from this clan. That
was really nice.
Yeah, you got to see when they made this weird corporate ninja world merger. There was a bunch that opposed, and so they knew they couldn't win aggressively, so they all ran away. And then you kind of go back to where the first episode was, and you saw one random character, you know, get killed, and a bunch of other guys are marking him off a list. So it's entirely possible that there are still a few left that have run away and are in hiding.
Absolutely. Well, this reminds me of the whole Mortal Kombat Lin Kuei story where the ninjas are traditional ninjas until they get cyberized into robots. And then you have a bunch of them going, no, and the clan hunts them down. Very similar, completely different in execution, but it's a similar idea. So it's a classic, really.
Yeah. What do you guys think Yamaji's endgame is?
World domination. Like, he's been pretty clear, what are ninjas if Japan goes away? If ninjas only exist to protect Japan, then Japan goes away, we are nothing. Therefore, we need to be more than that. We need to be owners of the world, is kind of what I'm seeing out of this.
Yeah. Couldn't he have accomplished that? You know, he still could have kept the clan going and kept a different mission, but he really could have open up their secrecy to an entirely new entity.
Could have, didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have been the non-toxic way to resolve that quandary he had, but he's clearly a very toxic person.
He's a bit of a mystery.
I mean, when I look at this guy, I see a guy who's got a legitimate quandary on his head. He doesn't know what to do. But he goes to such an extreme to be like, yeah, no, screw it. If you don't agree with me, screw you, you die. Even if you're a clan head person, no, I win, screw you. I don't get much out of him other than he control freak. He clearly isn't Auza bad. He definitely doesn't seem to like them much at all. And he clearly has a want to do things a certain way that he doesn't like how Auza does things. That I've noticed. So there is that. That makes it more of a lawful evil versus, say, a chaotic evil, but D&D terms.
We also get to see Mike and Jason as they're on their own adventures.
Which, I love this.
Yeah, Jason has... I'm sorry, but that is not the voice I would have ever attributed to that character. I cannot get used to it.
I'm telling
you, they should have just had Jason voice Jason.
Yes, they really should have. That's what I would have loved to... I was waiting for that to happen, and then it didn't.
It would have been really funny, but... Or someone who could, like, try and imitate him, which would have been even funnier.
That's true.
And him not even know it's coming until he watched it. And then been like, wait a minute, guys.
What did you do?
What did you do? Why does this sort of sound like me? Because every employee somewhat, I think, imitates their boss. So, I don't know. It would have been amusing. But it's fine, you know. Who is it? Joe Daniels. He's doing a good job. I just don't associate that voice with that character face. But yes, we get to see Mike's woken up. He's been treated by Jason. Jason. And Jason's like, oh, you've been paying for stuff, but also we have this rich person's house we're camping out in. And then they go back to their internet search and they meet up with Asuka again. So now the crew's all back together and they're going to pool their powers, I'm assuming, to do something amazing. I don't know. What do you think of this episode, V-Lord?
I really liked it. Like, I don't know. I mean, I think that there's still a lot that has to be resolved in the plot. And like, we have like, what, 5 episodes left?
3.
Wait, 3?
Yes.
God, that's even less than I thought.
Yeah.
That kind of makes me worried, if anything.
I don't know. This has been a really solidly paced series.
I actually agree with that. I feel like 3 episodes is enough to... Like, we're clearly setting up... We got all the heroes together. I really like the scene with Mike and Emma, where, you know, like, you know, flashback and using a song callback. I thought that was clever. But clearly, the Avengers have assembled. That gives us an episode for them to confront and start losing, an episode for them to start winning and or win, and a denouement episode, aftermath. I think they can make that work.
Yeah. And I guess she could become Emma permanently.
She could.
If she wanted to. I don't know how this is going to end for her, but yeah. I get what you're saying about stuff to resolve, though they've done a really, I feel like every episode a lot happens and they're doing a good job of pacing so far. And ultimately the only thing we all care about is Joe gets his revenge against Yamaji. And if that's accomplished, then the rest is just cake.
I want Joseph dead almost more than I want Yamaji dead. I want them both dead, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, part of me just kind of fears, like, okay, this is so good right now, but can it really stick the landing?
Well, that is the concern that I've had from the beginning. It's a Toonami original, and that has been a problem for almost all of them, so, yeah, good question. I hope so. It's had the time to do it, and it still has the time to do it, so I really think it can. Whether or not it will?
Well, we know there's at least 3 major physical confrontations that are left. So potentially that could happen one per episode. His counterpart, whose name I forget, the black samurai who let them go, who wanted the elegant fight, and then Yamaji. So unless they put two in one episode, that's at least one per episode confrontation wise. And I think having the other characters means they can split up the narrative so that Higan goes for what he's trying to accomplish, and then the other characters approach, you know, the other elements of this, potentially. And I still think the kid's dead. I'm sorry, I know you want him to be alive, but
it's not about want, it's about looking at narrative threads.
Yes. Well,
I'm on team dead kid. That sounds terrible.
I don't actually have a dog in the fight of team live kid or dead kid. It's just I'm looking at the narrative threads and I don't know why else you explain that. Because it's a needless detail otherwise, and this is a show that has only so much time. Why put in a detail that doesn't mean anything?
Well, because it's a technique that Higan can use. That's why. That's why
Higan can't use the technique.
Yeah, but she can teach it. And I would assume she would definitely teach it to her husband.
Well,
why would
we have no? He didn't even know what it was, so she clearly didn't.
I didn't see that. I didn't get an indication that he didn't know.
I felt like he was very surprised to be alive.
He was surprised to be alive. That doesn't mean he didn't. Because remember, he had that. After he wakes up, the guy says, "You tried this technique." And he says, "Yes." And he's like, "Don't try it again. You'll die."
True. You make a point there.
Yeah, they had a whole conversation about it. Like, you've used it once. You can't use it again.
Oh, no, but I think they were talking about, like, his attack technique, but maybe not. I don't know. We'll see, I guess.
I thought that technique was specifically related to his resurrection jutsu.
I think that was the technique with his arm where you, like,
that's what I thought
the
it
needle
was too.
Out of his, like, vein.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was, too.
I thought the needle in the vein thing was the
Well, the needles being thrown into the vein, which was thrown by Emma, was that technique, absolutely, but he didn't do that. She did.
Yeah, but how does he... But how do you know that's not the part of the technique
He didn't use that technique. Emma did. So why would you say don't use that technique again, saying you used it when he didn't use it?
He used it the first time.
He didn't. Emma did.
She used... Okay, so maybe I misunderstood this. I thought she was referring to when she saved his life from... when he was fighting Lil and the other robot ninjas.
No, she was talking about she stopped his heart, so it appeared that he was dead, but then he was not.
Okay, that may not be the same technique as
they
the
even
needle.
Showed.
You don't
well, they showed. They actually showed her when she was describing it, throwing those needles into him.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think Laser's right on this because the technique Emma was referring to was like when his family was attacked.
With the freezing of the blood cells and all that jazz. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just going to have to go back and rewatch it from the beginning.
I mean, I'll probably do that when it's over anyway, because this is actually that good so far.
In Japanese. Yeah. I don't know. I still think the kid's dead.
I guess we will... we'll have to come and find out in the end of the
show. The kid has to be dead, because then Paul will be right, and then we'll never hear the end of it.
We can't have that.
I'll tell you this much. Mari is definitely dead. There's no saving her. She's already... She's gone, no matter what.
I think a sword through the neck will definitely do it.
Yeah, but... No, I think there's a chance for Ren.
Well, speaking of swords through necks...
That's a connected piece.
Did you do that on purpose? because we have the three episodes of the Demon Slayer Entertainment District arc to get to. So yeah, when we left off on this podcast, it looked like Tanjiro and Tengen were just about to cut off Gyutara's neck. But it is never that easy, of course. And lots of stuff happens. he's able to neutralize the wisteria and then fends off Tengen and Tanjiro. and regenerate, obviously. So they don't get to cut off his neck, unfortunately. And as we learn at this point, the necks don't have to be cut off simultaneously, but one neck has to be cut off while the other is cut off, which is important. They have, that's then, it's still a timing issue. They got to get on that. But luckily we have the whole crew of amazing demon slayers, or actually we have a crew of one amazing demon slayer and three really talented amateurs.
Yeah.
That are gonna get on this.
That's
that
a good way to put it.
Way underqualified for this job, poor kids. So Gyotaro grabs Hinatsuru, one of Tengen's wives, as a way to get revenge on her for shooting the wisteria. And for a moment, everything turns to shit. And then Tanjiro and Tengen's rushing to save her. Tanjiro gets there first, taking a hit himself as he's doing this. And he is literally pushing past everything. He's in pain. He has no strength. His sword is tied to his arm. But he's like, we're going to finish this fight. I don't care if it kills me. So he uses his water breathing technique, uses the charge to stun the demon and save her. Tengen, grateful, he's grateful for his wife being saved, attempts again to cut off Gyotaro's head. Meanwhile, Zenitsu and Inosuke are fending off the Obi, which is the belt of Daki. And she's just got her Obi going completely overdrive. And at some point, it seems that they get into this really great, they all figure out their timing and they're working together. So Tengen is taking on Gyotaro, and the boys are working on Daki and fighting off all of the Obi coming on to attack Daki. And then Zenitsu and Tanjiro, while they're taking on the belt, our boar-headed friend goes and saws her head off with his swords, which I gotta say might be the most hilarious thing he's ever done in this series. Like, I didn't see that coming. What's interesting too is that this is like probably the fourth time her head has come off this far. Like, she just keeps coming back and her head keeps coming off. And, you know, luckily her brother is still alive because she's okay. He runs off with the head, and in a really hilarious moment, it's like, I'm just going to keep running with the head. You guys let me know when you get his brother. Unfortunately, Gyotaro goes and stabs him in the chest. And in a really traumatic moment, everything is completely awful again. And this is one of those ebbs and flows of battles that you see a lot in anime, but especially in Demon Slayer. I think they do a really good job of pushing the characters to the brink of hopelessness and then bringing them back with, you know, we're just going to push past that to one last go. He pushes his organs aside. Thank you, anime. And he's able to save himself from a fatal blow. And then the boys are just all right back at it, fighting Daki again. A lot more stuff happens. And then Gyotaro has like the final blow. Apparently everything explodes. He cuts off Tengen's arm. Everything's really shitty. I hate the part where he cuts off Tengen's arm, by the way. I hate that so much. I just hate it. I fucking hate it. Like, why do we have to keep doing this in anime with the cutting off the arm? I don't understand. But what we end up seeing is a really elegant sequence where Tanjiro is completely desperate and he grabs his sister and runs. He's the only one who's conscious. He thinks he's the only one that's alive, and he starts running. And it looks for a minute like he's trying to get out of there and he's trying to save his sister. And I don't blame him. And then Gyotaro catches up with him. Daki's meanwhile sitting on the top of the roof and just looking and laughing, thinking like, oh, we've won this. Just kill him already. And he's like, I don't know why I like you so much. And he sees his sister come out of the box and he's like, maybe it's because you're trying to protect your sister. And you definitely see a parallel between the two siblings that I think that's intentional. But Tanjiro, ha ha ha, he was doing it all to trick him. He throws the Wisteria soaked knife into Gyotaro's leg and covers up the scent with when he was thrown back into the fray with throwing a bunch of, I can't remember what they are, but it was something in the debris he threw to cover up the scent. It was like some kind of food item. Anyway, at that point he has just enough strength to take his sword and to make one last effort to cut off Gyotaro's head. And he is just right there when, once again, he's able to get past the Wisteria poison and to recover and get his demon blood working again to defend himself. But the best part about that is this has given Tengen enough time to get up and start fighting back. And you see this really beautiful action sequence of the two of them fighting. It's very fast paced. They're fighting. And Tenjiro's just trying to keep up. He's like, I got to be right there. I got to keep up. I got to be ready to make the blow when the moment happens. Then you see the other two boys get up. Inosuke gets up. Zenitsu gets up, who's still asleep, by the way. And you know, honestly, him being asleep through this whole battle might be my favorite part of it. The two of them come at it, and they're going at Daki with the very last bit of their strength. Tengen's using the last of his strength, and he's convinced he's dying, he's poisoned, he's got one arm. He goes all Zoro on his ass with the knife in the mouth, and I freaking love that, by the way. And it's a pretty epic conclusion where you finally get to see both sets of fighters behead both siblings simultaneously, and finally they've done it and they collapse from exhaustion. Pretty sure that Tanjiro thinks he's gonna die because he's poisoned, but he has decided already that he's ready to die. That's fine as long as he killed him. Tengen is also poisoned. Tengen probably thinks he's gonna die too. So we know from the wife with a voice who sounds like fingers on a chalkboard, crying and acting like he's gonna die. Oh my God, that woman. No offense to the voice actress, but that was the most fucking annoying thing about that whole episode is her crying and yelling. But thankfully, we have the world's greatest sister, Nezuko, burns away the poison from both of them. And you get to not only see, you know, Tanjiro gets up and he's like, all right, you know, aside from my broken fingers and, you know, the fact that my limbs barely work, I feel good now. And Tengen doesn't need to say his last words to his wives. Inosuke is rearing to go. Zenitsu wakes up finally, and he's like, I don't know what's wrong with me, but my legs don't work. And I'm like, who's going to tell him? Who's going to tell him what he's been doing this whole time? Will he believe it? Tanjiro wants to have one more check-in on the siblings' heads because he just wants to make sure that they're dead. And he sees them and they're arguing. And because he's a really good guy and he has this weird feelings about helping the demons understand their humanity again, I guess. Or maybe it's just relating to them as siblings. I'm not really sure, but he tries to help them make up in the end. I appreciate that as a character arc for Tanjiro. However, I didn't give a shit about these two demons. So we get to have this really great, I say this sarcastically, this long sequence where you get to see their history between Daki and Gyotaro. And we discover her name is actually Ume. And she was born to her mother, who died upon giving birth to her due to a disease. So she was named after the disease. The two of them grew up in the poorest part of the entertainment arc. They were bullied. They grew up very, very, very poor. They barely made it by. And he decided that he was always going to protect his sister because she was beautiful and pure and he was all that she had. So the two of them form this very close relationship, which all goes awry when Daki, at the very ripe age of 13, gets her first client, who she stabs in the eye in self-defense when he tries to assault her. Good for her, by the way. Anyway, She gets burned alive as a result, and Gyotaro isn't there to see it, so he gets to her not in time. And as he's holding her dying body, the samurai comes back with one of the madams from the area, and he gets stabbed in the back, so he turns around and, like, finds this last bit of strength and kills him. And I guess lucky for them, a demon comes upon them, and that's how they become demons. And then you get to see this scene of them in the afterlife where they actually reconcile. And he tries to encourage his sister to go to heaven, I guess, towards the light, wanting her to not follow his path. But she sobs and says she can't go anywhere without him. So they walk off into the flames together, which I'm assuming is hell, which makes a lot of sense. And then the other Hashira arrives and sarcastically praises Tengen for barely killing an upper rank six. Thanks, dude. Appreciate the vote of confidence. And he's like, so when are you going to get back? I mean, you're pathetic now, but we need all we have because we don't have much. And Tengen's like, nah, dude, I'm done. I'm retiring. You have to find someone else. But I know who you might be able to find. And it's very strongly implied that he's talking about Tanjiro. So everybody embraces. Everybody survived. And Nezuko is a precious princess who is just the best character in this whole fucking series. All right. So that's
I mean, no question there.
Yes. Man, the action sequences, though, were...
Oh, my really God. Some of the best in the series, honestly.
Yeah. Is this an ongoing trend, though, with Tanjiro just, like, trying to connect with these demons at some level? Is that like his, because you guys either
that is totally his I mean, I've read the whole manga, but that's totally his thing. Even up to this point, there's only a few cases where he's just like, nope, screw you, you're not worth even caring about. But I mean, he'll always and does here go, gotta stop you, you gotta die, you, no, you got too far. But once he's beaten them, he can empathize with a lot of them.
Yeah, he tries to find the good in people, even if, like, in the end he knows that they have to be killed.
That's just who he is.
I couldn't remember why he needed the demon blood, so V-Lord, you're going to have to re-explain that to me.
The demon blood is to research Nezuko's condition, because they're sending it back to Tamayo.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I thought it was something like that.
It has to be Kizuki blood. That's the key thing of it.
Upper six. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
He looked so, like, jaunty after that fight, too. Like, I'd be like, no, come back in a week. I'm dead. He's like, he just gets on her back, and she's like, where are we going next? And he's like, all right, let's go find the demon heads. Let's go back to our friends. And it's so cute. Like, I love the wholesome nature of their relationship and just how in tune they are as siblings. And it's a really interesting comparison to how Daki and Gyotaro are, because he carries his sister on his back as well, and Tanjiro carries his sister on his back for most of the series. But the difference is that they both support each other, you know. I don't know if anyone thought that was a good comparison. Come on, Demon Slayer people, you gotta give me this one.
I'd say so.
I thought it was cute. Mm-hmm. What'd you think about the ending of this arc, guys?
I think it's very poignant because and we talked about this in the Demon Slayer podcast with Gyotaro and Daki. There before the grace of God would be Tanjiro and Nezuko. They're like a dark reflective mirror. If the demons hold taking hold of them, I think that would have been them. That's what makes it such an interesting fight between the two sets of siblings. And I think that also probably is why Tanjiro can feel that empathy in this specific case for sure. Is, you know, if he had become a demon, and he really well could have been, probably would have been like that. I also really like the contrast, though, because he's not like that. And he actually does show his love for his sibling much more actively than Gyutaro does. I think the thing that, oh my gosh, hits me is Gyutaro going, well, I'm going to hell, but at least my sister's safe. Which shows, okay, there was a good person in there at one point. And the sister's like, no, you're not going alone. I'm going to hell too. And I'm just sitting here going, I shouldn't be happy for these two, but ow, my soul hurts.
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear that the series is trying to do a kind of parallel for Daki and Gyutaro to Nezuko and Tanjiro's relationship. Kind of like the reverse of, like, what if they were in this, like, worse situation? What if they did have a tragedy and they kind of faced it a different way? They reacted a different way? They had, like, a different upbringing? What would their lives be like? And it's like, I think even though I don't necessarily empathize with Gyutaro and Daki, I think they definitely are an interesting, I guess, thought piece in a way in the series. Yeah, and I think that makes them a good adversary for Nezuko and Tanjiro to really have this, like, one, our heroic duo, but then also this kind of, I guess, the foil to that, this antagonistic duo of siblings.
Yeah. But also, so normally I really don't enjoy when they have to give lengthy backgrounds to enemies, especially at some point in the battle. But first of all, they did this one better by having it afterwards. So that was helpful. But second, given that it was meant to be a dark reflection of the other two characters, at least by our reinterpretation, it makes sense to show their background for that very reason, that it's not just showing them as demons, but showing them as humans compared to what Tanjiro and Nezuko were as humans as well, and what that might have been. And I think even Gyutaro says at some point, he says, what you might have been without me, etc. He, like, envisions her being raised in different environments and wants to give her that chance, but she still chooses him. And you see Nezuko in a similar position, that she chooses her brother every time, you know, in the heat of battle when she lost herself. What brought her back was her brother, and what kept her, even when she was rabid, what kept her going was her brother, that she was still, without the binding part on her mouth, even then she was still attacking the demon to protect her brother. That strong sibling relationship survives. So, you know, in general, I sort of disparage against these lengthy, like, oh good, we get to hear about the bad guy and attempt to have empathy for him. I don't think this was intended. On the second time watching it, it strikes me that it was not intended to be an empathy, something to gain your empathy, as much as it was to give you the context for just what you both have said, is what if we'd seen the siblings in a similar situation with the same sibling bond? So that is really interesting. Also, is that something that the blood erupting, is that an upper six thing, or is that a general, like, a strong demon after they've been had their heads cut off, after they've been slain, like, you're going to have that explosion? Because I didn't remember that from the previous fights.
Pretty sure that's just a Gyutaro thing, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's just a Gyutaro thing.
Because Tengen, like, he seemed to know something was going to happen, and he's like,
he just kind of had battle sense going on there, is my read on that.
Also, that entertainment arc is fucked.
Oh, yeah. No, that place is just...
complete district is gone. It's done.
It's gone. Well, maybe we can send in Mau Mau to help them fix it.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? I don't think insurance is going to cover this one.
No, definitely not.
Demon fight is not covered by homeowner's insurance.
You need demon insurance for that, thank you. Sold to you by the Demon Slayer Corp. All funds go to help the Demon Slayer Corp fight demons.
God knows they probably need a little bit of help.
Lord, yeah.
As the Hashira said, we're a little low on people. Like, that is the thing that terrified me the most about this, that they were going to kill Tengen after killing the last Hashira. And he'd be like, no, you're not going to fucking do that to me. You're not going to kill another one. And then and after their ranks depleted and they're leaving three children in charge of this organization. That's not going to work for me.
I think that parallel was meant to be drawn. I think you're meant to dread that because we just did lose one. And... you do grow to really love Uzui. At first you hate him, and then you kind of end up loving the guy. And then they're like, oh, what if he dies? You're like, don't you do this, Demon Slayer! And that's, I think that's the intended feeling that the author's going for, because, yeah, that's not how it plays out, but they want you to think it is.
That's why they had to cut off his arm, goddammit. I hate when anime does that. I hate it so much. It's like, it's not like this is something that happens all the time for people. So why do a lot of these shows feel they need to embrace this as like, we're going to cut off people's limbs, especially if half the time they make it not mean anything and they can either just be regrown or grafted or some other nonsense.
It's very upsetting. I mean, even Star Wars does this. It's a way of like visualizing loss. It's a writing trope for a reason. It's not meant to gross out per se, although some people will do that for that reason. But I mean, Luke Skywalker's hand is cut off right before his biggest emotional trauma happens in Star Wars. It's the same kind of thing.
No, it's literally one of my worst fears. It freaks me out. I hate it.
I mean, I can totally understand why.
Yeah. Hey, so the scar transforming into the fire that gives him that last bit of power. What's that about, V-Lord? Huh?
Talk about that without going into spoilers.
That is definitely spoiler town.
So what I'm hearing is this is important, and yes. That's the thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very important.
Majorly so, yes.
That's so. But he has both fire and water breathing techniques. Is that normal?
No.
No.
Okay. I'm just asking questions. Tell me what you can.
We have to be careful because we could spoil the whole thing.
I just need a little info. Like, I feel like they hint at these really deep lore elements in these fights.
I mean, it's definitely a drip feed.
Yeah.
I will say, like, the whole Hinokami Kagura and like water breathing kind of combination Tanjiro has is very unique, but at the same time, it's not something that's like something only he could do.
Yeah.
The kind of point with Tanjiro and like his path is like, at the end of the day, he is very much a quote unquote normal person, but he's through perseverance and through embracing the history of like of the Demon Slayers and the people around him, he's learned all these techniques that have like allowed him to push through hardship.
Yeah, they really do a good job of highlighting his perseverance throughout the fight, because his internal dialogue consistently is showing him saying things like, just lift your arm, or just keep going, duck, move this way, jump, move your legs. Like, he's literally telling his brain to try to move his body because he's already surpassed what he's physically capable of. And he just keeps finding a little bit more to go. And I think it's the trope we see sometimes in the anime, like in the big boss fights, you know, in One Piece and Naruto for sure, is that they've reached past their limit and then they find the next bit of power and they keep going. But with Tanjiro, he has to talk himself into it in his head. You know, this isn't just like he's finding it. Obviously the scar thing is important to some way, but up until then, everything he's accomplished, he's done through pure perseverance. And it's pretty incredible. Like, it, as a human being, it's relatable to see him do that much more than I think sometimes, and I love the other shonen, but I actually loved this more because it felt more real in the fight, you know?
I think the thing I like, too, in this entire situation is that the series makes it very clear that Tanjiro isn't the strongest person in the room.
Not even close.
In fact, he's like, yeah, he's like, he's very much in the middle, in a way.
He's not
in, like,
amateur level anymore, not really, but he is nowhere near Hashira.
Exactly. But, like, despite that, he's still facing these overcoming odds that he could very well easily lose his life in.
Can we talk about Inosuke moving his organs to the side of being stabbed in the chest for a minute?
That's just a very Inosuke thing.
That is an incredibly Inosuke thing to do.
My sheer will. I trained in the mountains and it made me capable of moving my organs. Okay, we'll take it, I guess. That was amazing.
Inosuke is Inosuke.
Hashtag just Inosuke things.
Just Inosuke things.
I mean, he saws the head off of the demon. He's got to saw pretty quickly, too, to get at her.
I honestly feel like Inosuke is just too stupid to die.
I feel like that should have worked, damn it. It made me mad that they had to go back and do it again. I was like, come on, that was perfect. That was perfect. How undignified of a way to die is that? That should have been the end for her, man. Kornosuke. And Zenitsu, his final thunder breathing technique, he's like, this wouldn't have worked if I didn't have, you know, this won't work anymore. I only have one left. I can't remember which form it was, form 5 or something like that. I think it was. You guys will have to correct me. But he used one technique to save himself from the falling embers. And he's like, I can only do this one more time. And he puts it all into his final technique, and oh my gosh, like, I just want a mini series of just sleeping Zenitsu doing things. He's just so cool like that.
Yeah, no, Zenitsu is my favorite character for a reason. That's not because he simps.
Sleeping Zenitsu.
I mean, I like even waking Zenitsu despite himself. I put up with his flaws because there are parts of him I really do like.
My headcanon has it that all of the training and shit that he is doing awake that he can't absorb, like his alter sleeping ego is able to absorb it. That's why he's so good at it. Either that, or there's some other crazy reason that I haven't come up with yet. Cause he's pretty fucking amazing sleeping. Like,
he is.
He's
true.
He's like next level amazing when he's sleeping, which is awesome to watch. This makes me want to go back and watch the first time we get to see him have that form. It's actually pretty funny, but I don't know. Like, do his friends, you guys tell me, do his friends ever explain to him that this is something that happens to him? Or are they just, like, move on, not say anything? Seriously, is this in the manga? Is this ever addressed?
No, they kind of just never acknowledge it to him.
I was going to say, I don't remember it happening, but yeah.
So he wakes up and his legs hurt and they just say, oh, I don't know how you got there. Like, come on.
It's an Itsu. He'll believe it. Be like, oh, okay. I guess it just happened then.
He's a little dumb.
He is a little dumb.
So, maybe. He reminds me of my cat.
I mean, all three of our trio might as well just have the tagline, I may be stupid.
I don't know. I don't think Tanjiro's dumb. He's a precious nugget.
Oh, he is precious. Protected. He also looks at a train and just like doesn't know what it is.
Well, he's been living in the mountains his whole life.
I know.
He's never seen a train before.
He's country. There are different levels of dumb. He's country bumpkin dumb.
He's naive. That's not the thing.
He's naive. Inosuke is dumb because he's hard-headed, and Zenitsu is dumb because he's a simp.
He is. Yeah, fair enough. Nezuko just has to be smart for all of them.
Nezuko has the one brain cell for all four of them.
Unfortunately, she can't talk, so they're kind of left to their own devices. I do love this ability that she has. Her fire can purify them.
That is very cool. I agree.
Yeah. Like, I mean, her ability to regenerate was already pretty awesome when she was fighting Doki one-on-one. And she's fighting pretty sloppy, too, which is why she kept getting shit cut off. Also very upsetting to watch. But that's because she's not trained in her... She's not been trained how to use any of these abilities that she's slowly awakening, it seems. But this purifying fire was pretty awesome. Is that something we're gonna see again?
It's definitely something that's used again, but I feel like this is the greatest extent that we see it applied.
I mean, Nezuko definitely does have other things going on that will come into play soon.
TBD.
Yeah.
Imagine if she had survived and she'd been the one to become the Demon Slayer. I think about that a lot.
I actually would love to see that as like an alternate take where Tanjiro's the demon and she's the Demon Slayer. And I think, you know, given things, I think it could play out very similarly where she's trying to save him. I could see it.
Well, also, I feel like she might have some existing natural abilities that would have given her a different edge as a Demon Slayer. It would be really cool to see that. I don't know. Alt universe canon.
Yeah, keep watching the space for that sort of thing.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure that'll appear somewhere. Fandoms. Any final thoughts about Entertainment District arc, guys?
That's my second favorite arc of the whole story. It's really good.
It's probably my favorite arc of the whole series.
My favorite is just the next one. Swordsmith Village is just a lot of fun, but...
Why is it your favorite, V-Lord?
It's my favorite because I really like how it incorporates all these moving parts. I think the Entertainment District as a setting is really cool. But then also, one, the fact that Daki and Gyutaro are this nice parallel to Nezuko and Tanjiro is really cool. To like make that be kind of the main conflict. But then also the main fight itself has so many like stages and layers to it. And in the end, even though it is a pretty long fight, it feels like a team effort to reach its conclusion. Like every single person that fights Gyutaro and Daki plays an important role. And I think the core message at the end that like, yeah, we work so hard, we were on the brink of death, but at the end of the day, we're alive and that's what matters is like, I think really powerful. And I think it like kind of, one, sets the stage for, I think, some of the bigger battles in the series and kind of the ongoing plot threads. But then also it's, I think on its own, just a very satisfying endpoint for a story arc. It doesn't feel like, you have this feeling where it's like, okay, I want to know what happens next, but it's also like, okay, I'm satisfied for now.
Yeah, that's a good point. I also thought the fights were really visually appealing to watch. I mean, the abilities were cool, but I loved the sequence where you had Inosuke, Tanjiro, and Zenitsu finally finding their timing right together and using it to make progress on Daki. And that I love also seeing Tengen when he had his sound form and he turned the demon blood attacks into a rhythm that he could follow and attack back on. Like there's some really, really well animated sequences in this arc for the anime, at least, because I obviously haven't read the manga, but they did a really good job visualizing these in a cohesive animated format and making it really flashy. Not to make a pun, but these were very flashy fights, and that's really fun and really kind of perfect for the Toonami block, just to have like these intense fights that have these really high stakes ebbs and flows. It looks like they're getting close, and then they get a really traumatic setback, and then they get really close again, and they get a traumatic setback. I mean, they come close to beheading Gyotaro twice before they actually manage it. And then, like I said, they behead Daki. By the end of it, they beheaded her six times, I think. You know, so they really tease this fight for you to make it last, rather than having a lengthy discussion about it and then having one major attack. Like, they're showing different elements of attacks, and it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool animated sequence, I think. Yeah. Well, any final thoughts on any of these from the last three? We have Demon Slayer, we got Ninja Kamui, we got Zom 100. Any final thoughts, guys?
It's a good time to be a Toonami fan. Like you said, we've got ninjas, zombies, and of course, demons. Good times.
We don't have demons anymore. How do you think that we will get the Swordsmith arc?
I don't see why they would have given them Entertainment District if they don't intend to keep giving them Demon Slayer, especially given that Aniplex has been really pushing. Like, we have Licorice Recoil as well from them. I feel like we're definitely going to see more.
What do you think, B-Lord? What's the timeline?
I don't know what the timeline is, but I'm of the opinion, like Laser, that it's going to come eventually. I mean, the thing is nowadays, all these deals for anime, especially with streaming being such a big part of it, like, kind of makes it this whole kind of jumbling mess of sorts. So I feel broadcast rights and broadcast of anime kind of falls to the wayside sometimes for some of these newer shows. But I'd say when there's a will, there's a way. And I think there is enough demand and value in having Demon Slayer on broadcast television that I think Toonami's going to get it eventually.
I haven't watched it yet, specifically because I honestly think it's going to come on soon. I mean, I didn't expect Zom 100. I figured there'd be something, but I'm hoping that after they play it, we'll get Demon Slayer back. Because I don't know if I can wait 12 weeks, man. That's hard. I really want to know what happens. Like, even rewatching it, this was the second time I watched it, and I was still kind of blown away by how good it is. So, I don't know. I think if you want it as fans, you have to ask for it. We got to keep being vocal about being appreciative, watching the block when it's on the block, and then asking for it to come back. You know, I don't think that works with every series, obviously, because sometimes you're just spamming Adult Swim, and we don't want to do that. That's obnoxious, and that can make it so that they don't care about, you know, what we want. But something like this, where they're seeing that everybody's watching it and they're enjoying it and they're liking it, I think it's good to vocalize appreciation for something like this. So anyway, I don't have any talkbacks tonight. I'm going to reserve those for when we come on. We're going to probably come on after we have a couple more episodes of Zom 100. But I think that's a wrap, guys. B-Lord, where can they find you?
Yeah, I mean, people can find me on Twitter, or I guess X, Blue Sky, Instagram, under the name VLordGTZ. I'm usually just like tweeting about what I'm up to, which nowadays is kind of just me going to movie theaters. I see way too many movies. So
no such thing.
See, I think there might be such a thing, because I sometimes see like 6 or 7 movies in theaters a week, which is a lot, sometimes multiple in a single day. But for the people that are interested in like seeing that type of stuff, yeah, go to my Twitter. And yeah, I do a bunch of stuff on the internet besides that. I am the owner of MangaMavericks.com, where we cover the wide array of manga news and manga out there, and also a little bit of anime. So check out our wide array of interviews and reviews over there. By the time this episode's up, our preview of some of the upcoming Crunchyroll simulcast for the spring anime season will be up. So if you want to hear my thoughts on Kaiju number 8 and why it's going to be anime of the season, go give that a read on our website. And then I do a bunch of podcasts besides this one. The Demon Slayer podcast is the big one that I do very often with Laser. And then I do a bunch of other ones. Saturday Night Shogi, which is about Shogakukan anime and manga. Dumb Weebs, which is more our dumping ground to talk about anything anime and manga. And yeah, so you can check out all our podcasts that I do over on MangaMavericks.com as well. So yeah, just go to MangaMavericks.com.
Great. Sounds like you're really busy then. That's awesome. And good for you for branching out in different directions. Laser, where can they find you?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at LaserKidPrime. You can find me on Blue Sky at LaserKid, assuming I actually post over there. And actually, I'm starting up my own new podcast, which by the time this comes out, hopefully I'll be sitting on YouTube. The Simuldub Saints that me and my friend Archangel are doing. We're going over all of the season's simuldubs, at least for the first episode. There's no way we can cover every single show in depth, that there's 26 of them. But we mentioned them all in that first episode that is going up soon. And, of course, you can find my editorials right here on Toonami Faithful.
Yeah, looking forward to listening to that first episode, Laser.
Thank you.
And you can email the Toonami Faithful at podcast@toonamifaithful.com. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/ToonamiFaithfulPodcast, or on Twitter at Toonami Podcast, which I'm assuming you must already do. And if you do, then you can also follow us on Blue Sky, though I can't off the top of my head remember what the tag is, but I'm assuming it is Toonami Podcast, similar to our Twitter. You can listen to us on pretty much anywhere you get your podcasts: iTunes, Google Music, Spotify, radio app, etc. You can find this episode and any episode of the podcast, including the past episodes where we've talked about Demon Slayer, past episodes on Ninja Kamui, and the previous episode where you get to hear everyone's thoughts on Zom 100, who've actually already watched the show. So that should be interesting. SoundCloud.com/TheUnfaithfulPodcast or on the website. You can get the latest news, views, and reviews at the Toonami News Twitter or on ToonamiFaithful.com, where the three of us occasionally submit editorials for.
I might have one in the near future, maybe.
Yeah, well, looking forward to it. And you can subscribe to the Toonami Faithful Pass or the podcast at our Patreon at patreon.com/ToonamiFaithful. And you can finally follow me, currently only on Twitter, at HappyKuroKitty. I do technically have other social media, but you'd just be wasting your time following them because I don't have enough time to devote to them. However, in the future, we are looking to expand in some exciting ways, such as talking about having another very rare episode of the Toonami Faithful Ladies Takeover with Umeko, and some other exciting things. So stay tuned, everybody. Keep listening. Send us your thoughts. And please be patient with me. It's been a while since I've hosted. Peace out.